Hello and welcome to the Euromoney Conference's online Eurasia podcast for the 22nd of May 2014. This is episode 10 and we are going a bit further south than we normally do for our podcasts, and we're going to talk about Africa. And joining us today is somebody who may well be known to some of you who are listening, because she used to work for Euromoney Conferences. She covered Africa for us for 3 years. Her name is Rhea Hubbell, and she is now the COO of Invest Africa. Welcome, Rhea.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you here. Now, for those two or three amongst our massive listenership who do not know what Invest Africa is, could you just give us a quick thumbnail on who you're working for now, what they're doing, and why we should be interested in it?
Absolutely. So Invest Africa was founded a year ago to the month by Rob Hersoff, a South African entrepreneur, and it is an invitation-only private members network, a fully multi-service platform to help our clients access Africa. We have offices or chapters in London, New York, Johannesburg. Most recently, on Sunday, we launched in Dubai, and next week we are launching in Switzerland. It's been a huge success over the last year. Our membership base has grown from zero to almost 300 members in the space of a year. And because of that, we have been able to launch a very successful deal platform, which helps put our investors together with potential opportunities across the continent. We have regular informed events. We run investor roadshows across Africa, have experienced speakers. And it's just a great way to access the continent or access information about the continent. We are very, very lucky to also have Bob Diamond as our president chapter head in New York, and Ashish J. Takar, who heads up our Dubai chapter as well.
So who are your, you've got 300 members.
We do.
Who are they? I mean, not necessarily by name, but what sort of institutions are your members?
So we have a really diverse group ranging from private equity, hedge funds, family offices, pension funds. We're also accessing or help accessing sovereign wealth funds on the continent and off the continent, to link up with either joint ventures with local, with other members in the sort of institutional or private money space, and also high net worth individuals. So it's actually quite cross purpose and works quite well, because you'd be surprised how many can work together.
And we'll come on to talk in a minute about why Africa is wonderful, but why is Invest Africa wonderful? Why do these people join your network? What do they get from you that they wouldn't get, say, by approaching the continent on their own?
Really, at the end of the day, it's access. We help our clients with simple tasks, such as, you know, we might have a client call us and say, we are going to Ghana or Sierra Leone or Senegal, for example, and they want to know who the right people to speak to. And over the last, not only year, but with my experience on the African continent and our presidents and partners, we have a fully integrated network of the right consultants and strategic partners on the ground. So we're able to connect investors with the right people and the right decision makers, whether that be on a transactional basis or an investor or a deal basis. And access really is what you need with trustworthy sources.
Absolutely. Is it purely a question of providing that link, that access, or are you actually involved in the transactions themselves?
Well, we've been very fortunate to get one of our partners on our sister company, which is called African Capital Investments, and that is where our deal platform sits. And we're able to transact almost in a merchant bank capacity for our clients if they want. So yes, we can be involved in the deal process, right through from origination to corporate advisor and anything in between, capital raising, etc.
And is it purely a one-directional flow, as it were? So you're taking non-African companies and individuals and capital and putting them into Africa, or is there sort of intra-continental deal flow as well?
Interestingly, very good question, actually. It started off with what we thought was going to be international capital looking to access the African continent. But because of the network that we've started to create, it's very much both ways. So we might have a large corporate from the United States who wants help accessing either a network onto the African continent. But through that, we've also met with a lot of corporate institutions in Nigeria, for example, and other countries within the continent who are looking now to expand their operations outside of Africa. And through our investor network, it's actually quite easy to marry the two up. So it absolutely goes both ways. Of course, at the moment, the larger percentage is the internationals going into Africa. But I think eventually within the next 18 to 24 months, we might see a lot more issuance on international exchanges from African institutions and also some larger joint ventures in the future.
And in terms of the business model that you're running, it takes a membership. So members come along and they pay a membership fee. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So we have an annual membership fee a year. Essentially, it's a pay-to-play model. It's actually not very much. We charge £5,000 a year for a corporate membership, and that gives you access to all of the data that we provide on a weekly and quarterly basis, all of the invitations to access our investor roadshows, any of the joint ventures that we do. Of course, one of those is with Euromoney on an African conference that we're going to be focusing on in the next year. And also access to being able to speak at our events.
Sure.
Plus, of course, the deal flow, which is where everyone really wants to get involved.
But then, I mean, presumably you have additional charges for other things. So if I called you up and said I wanted to go to, you know, Burkina Faso, could you connect me with the right Burkina Faisans? You would say, absolutely, know everybody in Ouagadougou, but, you know, we're going to charge you a little bit extra for that service. Is that correct, or am I way off the line?
No, absolutely, you're spot on. The membership is an annual membership fee, which gives you access to the basic benefits, of which there are many. And then it's a bolt-on service past that.
And now we've done the commercial, which is important. Let's move on to look at the continent a little bit, and where particularly are you seeing your membership base being interested? Is the idea that we approach Africa from a sort of geographical perspective still a valid one, or should we be looking at it more from a sectoral point of view?
Often it depends on your investor base. So, for example, hedge funds or private equity firms will have a group of investors that have specific mandates that require the fund or the larger investor to look at certain either regions or sectors that fund is mandated to do.
Sure.
One of the things that has become more apparent is that the cross-continent, cross-sector funds aren't performing as well as the more niche, smaller funds focusing on what their partners have speciality in. Right now, investors are really searching for yield, and that only comes at the moment with specializing in either the sector that you've known, whether it be within Africa or in emerging markets, and also looking at, the management behind it. More and more, you're seeing boutique firms transacting on oil and gas or agriculture or alternative energy rather than the traditional investment banking model that has been in the past.
You know, some of your investors, your members are hedge funds, asset managers, institutional investors. And of course, traditionally, this type of asset manager likes to invest in securities, into liquid securities. And Africa is not known for the depth and liquidity of its securities markets outside a few small exceptions, particularly in South Africa. So are you seeing a different way that these institutional investors are approaching Africa, perhaps more of a private equity play?
Absolutely. A lot of the funds, whether they be hedge funds, whether they be a private equity focused fund, are actually changing their strategy to look more at a direct project by project basis, which is much more, as you said, a private equity play. This enables the investor to raise capital on a deal by deal basis, which mitigates the risk or restrictions of having a sector-specific or region-specific focus. What investors are looking for really on the continent and where they find yield is a strong management team on the assets they're trying to acquire or invest in, rather than whether it be a liquid or an illiquid asset. They're looking for the long-term profitability of a project.
Well, that's what I was going to, you just beautifully segued into my next question, which has been, this is frontier market stuff, and you're never going to find, the liquidity to take short-term positions. Are you, what you're saying is that the time horizon for successful investment in Africa is 3 years, is 5 years? I mean, if you're going to make an investment in the market, you really need to be thinking that your capital is committed for a longer period than you would normally think of in a capital markets product.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of our investors are willing or understand that a successful deployment of capital will be either tied up or illiquid for around 7 years.
7 years. That's quite a long time.
It
but
is.
They get absolutely. That.
They do. They totally understand that. And a lot of that is down to recapitalizing the investment, either management changes that need to be made, and ensuring that everything is done above board, and that often takes time to ensure that you're running, through the right hoops and making sure everything's done accurately. And so 7 years is most people's exit strategy plan. But of course, that's the main focus before an investment is made, is there an exit strategy? Because traditional markets, even in emerging markets, most people's strategy would be to list on a market. And given, as we just we're discussing, the illiquidity of markets, the exit strategy has to be, executed or planned completely before an investment's taken place.
And exits would be what, strategic sale or secondaries or what's
absolutely,
the...
Absolutely, yeah. Most people make an investment on the proviso or deal that they know a second or larger firm that's willing to make that acquisition once the company is or asset is at that stage to be sold off.
Mm-hmm. So, the question always with these things, you've got an illiquid investment, you've got a limited number of options for your exit. You're in markets which are not known for their transparency. You got these things add up to one word, which is risky.
Yes.
And of course, investors being investors want to manage their risk. There's nothing wrong with risk as long as your return is, compensates you for taking that risk. That's the business we're all in. But how do the investors manage that risk? Is it, just a pure old-fashioned portfolio approach, which is, if I have seven investments, three of them are going to be fantastic and the other four will be donkeys? Or is there a more sophisticated and nuanced risk management strategy in place?
I think the key terminology here is due diligence, mm-hmm. proper due diligence and thorough due diligence. Most of our investors will have a relatively a relatively diverse portfolio, whether it be on the continent or in emerging markets. But they will look at less risk-averse sectors or geographies, as well as the risky ones, to mitigate that risk as well. Less developed sectors on the continent, for example, renewable energy, agriculture due to land restrictions or requirements, and technology, for example, have a much higher risk, especially if they're in the development stage of the project. But a lot of companies, if they have real estate or oil and gas assets, find that quite appetizing because they have, you know, have done the proper due diligence, but also have the diverse portfolio to take on that risk.
Sure, I understand. You know, what we started early on in this discussion, we talked about the fact that, you know, a sectoral approach is interesting, is probably the better way to look at the continent rather than a sort of top-down buy Africa thing. But let's just quickly, before we close, look at some particular countries. We are, one of my teams is in Ethiopia next week. It's a country that we like. We are hoping to do a Euromoney conference there in either September or at the end of the year. So, you know, that's definitely something that we see as a long, medium to long term play on the continent. Is there anywhere that you, as Invest Africa, particularly likes, perhaps that isn't high on people's radar screen?
Well, in all honesty, we love Ethiopia too. It's one of our top countries in terms of interests. There's huge amount of potential, and the country I know is making certain moves and waves to hopefully open the country for international investor, and we have a large proportion of our investor group at Invest Africa very interested in the country. We also, you know, everyone seems to be interested in Nigeria. We've got quite a few members who have made considerable successful acquisitions in Nigeria. But Ghana as well is another country that we focus on. In Francophone Africa, we look predominantly at Senegal, but we also are working very close with the Rwandan government. And Mozambique is also somewhere where we're particularly interested in the moment. But we won't discredit or not look at any country on the African continent. Everywhere has opportunity and, you know, potential.
Sure. Yeah. One always forgets from sitting in London or New York or somewhere just how enormous Africa actually is, and that pursuing a cross-continent strategy is somewhat taxing on the executives who are charged with pursuing that, as you personally know.
Absolutely. In fact, actually, it's one of the things that every time I'm speaking to an investor or I'm speaking on a panel at a conference, you know, I like to highlight that Africa is a continent. It's not a country. And some of those countries are very small, and right across the border, the culture, the investment climate, the risk are all wildly different. And it's important to understand where your interests lie, what appetite you're interested in. For example, you know, with the change of the language of a country also comes change of legal frameworks and regulations. So although India, for example, has the same population or slightly large population than Africa as a continent, it's still one country as opposed to, you know, disputed 55 on the African continent. So very important to note.
Yeah, well, I know, you know, you and I have sat on aeroplanes traversing the continent. Just final question. Zimbabwe.
Yes.
A country that you and I both worked in and both like very much, and, you know, would agree, I think, on the enormous potential of the country. Where are we with that? I mean, you know, the ZANU-PF came back in, the MDC are out, MDC seems to be pulling itself to bits. What's the prospects for Zimbabwe over the next few years? What should our followers and your investors be looking for? Is it essentially speaking, the death of Mr. Mugabe, who is still going very strong, but he is not a young man? Or is there something else that would be a signal that Zimbabwe is really sort of beginning to shape up and be sensible again?
Well, no matter what a personal opinion you might have of the political affairs in Zimbabwe, I don't think anyone will have the golden answer. And I think if they did, they'd be much wealthier than you or I, Richard.
Which is difficult, right? Knowing how wealthy we are. Yes.
Exactly. But we've actually, you know, we've got investors who have made investments and made them recently in Zimbabwe. We were there in February with a group of investors, 12 investors from interested in about 6 different sectors, of which 2 have made investments in the last 3 months, which would indicate no matter how complicated or risky a country is, investors are still writing checks, finding assets, and finding a way to make money in a country that, although is complicated, is one that, as you rightly said, is very dear to our hearts and spent a lot of time there. So there's plenty of opportunity. Again, no idea what would happen with ZANU-PF and the MDC in future. And I think that's changing on a daily basis.
Yes, that's what I see. They all seem to be doing what they... well, anyway, the political situation is what it is, but the investment opportunity remains.
Absolutely.
Now, final question, because you're the expert on Africa. Which was the only African country that was in recession last year?
Wow, good question.
There was one.
It must be Egypt.
No, Egypt. No, that was 2.2%.
Wow, it's doing
Egypt never. It's only had one quarter of negative growth throughout all of its problems. Amazing. You would think it was more, but anyway, you've got a population growing at 6% and an economy growing at 2.2%.
Okay, well, so where do you not have population growing at a rate like that? That's where you have to look for the doom and gloom. I couldn't tell you. Maybe a small country.
Equatorial Guinea.
Wow.
So there you go.
There you go. And I was there in January. I should have been able to tell you that.
But it's the only one, and it's not a very deep recession, and it's not projected to last. I think it was more political than anything else. Out of 55 countries in Africa, is that right? Do you think there are 55?
Yeah, 54. Some people say 55. Depends on your.
Where's the difference of opinion?
Does Morocco own the disputed Western Sahara? I'm not sure. I would see it as a separate state, but not everyone does.
Okay. Well, okay, fine. So 54, 55 countries, only one in recession. That is not bad going. So,
absolutely.
I know that we'll be hearing a lot more from you, Rhea, as we develop the Euromoney Invest Africa event that is being discussed, and I hope that we can welcome you to some of the things that we do, and I wish you all the best.
Well, I look forward to seeing all of your members in Eurasia and the Middle East sometime soon.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that is it for today's podcast, episode 10 of the 22nd of May. Just as a usual parting shot, please subscribe to the podcast. You can do that through iTunes, or you can also catch up with it on euromoneyconferencesonline.com, where you can see all of the videos from the 2 recent Saudi conferences we ran, one in Riyadh, which had, amongst others, Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan speaking, the day before yesterday's first Saudi UK Investment Forum, which was held in London and had a glittering array of British and Saudi dignitaries, as well as some actually really genuinely interesting panel discussions on some of the key opportunities in Saudi Arabia from an external perspective. And that is that. Thank you for listening.